Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. So we will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat or just because they're a Republican and you voted that way your entire life, well, just maybe you were wrong, because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there that are working for your benefits, and we're going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them speak. We're going to let you ask them questions. We're also going to be discussing the education system, the military, science, sports, music, the movies. Ah, yes, healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Is your 26-year-old still on the family's health care plan? Or as the Progressive Party says, Obamacare? We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word in everything. From the cities, the counties, the state, the nation, the entire world. So sit down. Get a pencil, paper, and take a graduate education experience, and we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
I am so glad you used that second clip there, that under oath one, because what she says immediately before that is that the president is offering to debate members of this committee. And she says that is nonsense. This is not some serious playground taunts thing. This is a standing committee of Congress. And if you wish to have words with any of us, you can come in and do it under oath and then be prosecuted for perjury or contempt of Congress if you choose not to apply. So, it's putting him...
Putting him in a tough position? Are you joking me? What are we talking about here? How can you put anybody like that in a tough position? Good afternoon, everybody. This is Michael Lawson, and this is The Last Word. And everything. Yeah, well, I tell you what. It has been an outrageous week. And you know what? It's going to get worse, because when it comes time for these clowns to start giving up what they know, giving up of everything that they've done to us, there's going to be a lot of
trouble. Well, there's the weather, of course, when it's in season.
Now, Mars, I need some ideas if I'm going to get your town out of the serious trouble it's in.
River City ain't in any trouble.
We're going to have to create some. Must create a desperate need in your town for a boys band. So why does everybody keep rubbering into the billiard parlor?
Oh, they just got in a new pool table.
They must have seen a pool table before.
No, just billiards.
That'll do it. You just sit where you are, and remember, if you see that music teacher... Are you Mr. Dunlop?
Yeah?
Well, either you're closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are not aware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a pool table in your community. Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble right here in River City. Why, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a cue in my hand are golden. Help me cultivate horse sense and a cool head and a keen eye. Did you ever take and try to give an ironclad leave to yourself from a three-rail billiard shot? But just as I say it takes judgment, brains, and maturity to score in a bop-line game, I say that any boob can take and shove a ball in a pocket. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degradation. I say first, medicinal wine from a teaspoon, then beer from a bottle. And the next thing you know, your son is playing for money in a pinchback suit. And listening to some big out-of-town Jasper, hearing him tell about horse race gambling. Not a wholesome trotting race, no, but a race where they set down right on the horse. Like to see some stuck-up jockey boy setting on Dan Patch, make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got one, two, three, four, five, six pockets in a table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum, with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. And all week long, your River City youth will be frittering away. I say your young men will be frittering. Frittering away there noontime, supper time, chore time too. Get the ball in the pocket. Never mind getting dandelions pulled or the screen door patched or the beefsteak pounded. Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with a cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the Knickerbocker, shirt-tail young ones, peeking in the pool hall window after school. You got trouble, folks, right here in River City. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Now, I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversation goes on while they're loafing around that hall? They've been trying out Bevo, trying out Cubabs, trying out TaylorMades like cigarette fiends, and bragging all about how they're going to cover up a telltale breath with sense. And one fine night, they leave the pool hall, heading for the dance at the armory. Libertine men and scarlet women and ragtime. Shameless music that'll grab your son, your daughter, with the arms of a jungle. Animal instinct, masteria. Friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble!
Oh, yes, oh.
Right here in River City. With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
Pool.
We surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right,
gotta figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school. Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Cap'n Billy's whiz-bang? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell. Aha, and so's your old man. But if so, my friends, you got trouble. Right here in River City. With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. We surely got trouble. Right here in River City. Remember the Maine, Plymouth Rock, and the Golden Rule. Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is the devil's tool.
Devil's tool.
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Yes, we got big, big trouble.
With a T.
With a capital T.
And rhyme it with P.
That rhymes with P.
It stands for pool.
That stands for
pool. Remember, my friends, listen to me because I passed this way but once.
They cut us off. I don't know. We're in trouble, trouble, trouble in River City. I tell you what. Well, the clown show is in trouble. Not only here in River City, but they're in trouble overseas. They're over They're in trouble in the U.S. They're in trouble any place they walk because they are so down far the rabbit hole that they are not going to be able to get back. They are not going to be able to get back because these, I mean, I just can't even imagine the nonsense that these, they're not even Republicans. You can't even call them Republicans. And realistically, if those that were the former Republicans, they need to start a new organization. And I know it'd take some time for them to get up where they should be, but we need a new party in this country because all we have now is the Democratic Party. The other so-called entity is a cult. And we can't have a cult ever to be in charge again of this great country. You know, a cult cannot run a country. A cult is only there for those people that don't know any better. That's what a cult does. A cult is for those people that want to belong to a some sort of venue with a particular figurehead, with some sort of religious devotion, some sort of small group of people that have beliefs and practices that are sinister, strange, place their admiration for a particular person or thing. Now, the last particular person or thing, because he was a thing, he was orange, and he was supposedly a person, we can't have something like that running the country of the United States of America. I mentioned the last time we were on the air, you need to go and see, rent the film, The Grifters. Because that will tell you what it was, the orange man in the White House. And he, I guess, would have, we have to say, I have to say, he was like the most prolific of all grifters. The one who took it to the upper reaches of grifterism and became president of the United States. Not only in the movies this thing happened. It doesn't happen in real life, but it did. And look what has happened. I don't want to say that the whole entire GOP was that way. But how do you get an entire organization to go down the tubes? How do you do that? These people will not do what's right, even if they all go down with the ship. And that's what's going to happen. Unless they save themselves at the last minute. But they have gone so far down the rabbit hole, I just don't see how they could ever see up again. They're going down and down and down, and they can't even turn around to look back to see where they're from. And if they could, they're so far down the rabbit hole, seeing that black emptiness, that when they turn around, all they're going to see is black emptiness. They won't be able to see any more light because they're so far down that rabbit hole. People calling me. I'm on the line. I'm on the radio, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, this is how these people are. They're so far down the rabbit hole. Let's see who's on the line here. Hello there. Who's this?
Hello. This is Wilhelmina Rembert. Yes. How are you?
Hello, Wilhelmina Rembert. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. I'm bringing some good news for your show this afternoon. You've been talking about some things that are kind of dark, right?
Oh, yes. Hey. What can you say? Anytime
I've got
you talk
good
about
news.
The man, the orange man in the White House, you're talking dark.
Well, I'm coming to talk about something very positive.
Oh, wonderful. We love to hear it. We love to hear it.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael, for allowing me to come on your show this afternoon, because I am working with an organization, Integrated Management Strategies, to help promote the Affordable Care Act open enrollment period, which began on November 1st and runs through January the 15th. And it's so important right now because, as you know, and I think you would agree, everyone needs access to affordable and quality health care coverage. And right now, during a pandemic, that could not be more important, okay? And so what we want to do is we want to make sure that people who are uninsured or underinsured know that there is an option, there is a remedy, there is an opportunity for them to gain access to insurance during this open enrollment period. And so that's why
especially with the Omicron, with the new variant coming out.
New variant. Absolutely. And you and I both know that we have so many people in marginalized communities, underserved communities, often underserved populations in urban, suburban, and rural communities that do not have access to quality health care. And very, very often they don't have access to health care coverage. Well, with the American Rescue Plan having provided additional funding to the American Affordable Care Act, that made it possible for more people to gain access to coverage at lower prices. So you have people, more people can now qualify who didn't qualify before, or they might have more benefits now at a lower cost. Do you follow me?
Yes, because I knew some people that could not get the Affordable Care Act because they were just above the brink of making more money than they
could. Yes, absolutely. And so now that's
right.
Why it is so important for people to know that with the new law and lower prices, more people qualify, they should consider reapplying if they've applied before or if they're currently receiving the coverage, reapply under these new provisions to see what additional benefits they might qualify for, right? And
absolutely.
And at what price, because it will cost them less money right now with the new law.
That's great. That's fabulous. That's fabulous.
And
a friend of mine who couldn't get it because he I think he was making like $1,000 more than he should have been making, and he could not apply. And he had three kids.
Yeah. Well, I would encourage that person and anyone else who finds themselves in a similar situation to go back and reapply. Because they may now find that they are eligible for more benefits at a lower cost, because that is what American Rescue Plan has really enabled the Biden and Harris administration to make health care more accessible to more people. The other thing, I asked you about being a champion for coverage, and the fact that you're allowing me to be on your show to talk about this makes you a champion for coverage, such that you can continue to promote this on your show through January the 15th. Now, for persons who go online at healthcare.gov, they can see what the different plans are, find out what will work best for their situation, their individual or family situation. If they apply by December 15th and they qualify, they will have coverage that will commence on January 1 of 2022. But if they don't apply until after December 15th, but before January 15th, and they qualify, then their coverage won't begin until February 1st. But what is important is that this open enrollment period does extend now through January the 15th. And so we want people to go online during this open enrollment period, because it's not going to stay open forever. Now, there might be special conditions where people who have changes in their life circumstances, maybe they get married or they have a baby or that kind of situation where when you have a major life event like that, you might be able to enroll later. But this is the open enrollment period for those who otherwise don't fall into that category. Okay.
Right. Okay. That's very good.
I really thank you for being a champion for coverage, and we can talk more later. But the key is for people to know the new law allows for lower premiums, more people qualify. Go online to healthcare.gov, or they can call this number for help. It's the 800 number. That's 800-318-2596.
And it's 800-318-2596.
That is correct. Okay? Got it? Are you still there, Michael?
Okay. The internet dropped out right in the middle, so I got a hold of Wilhelmina, and she's going to be calling us back in a little bit. But ladies and gentlemen, So this is great now. The healthcare.gov is what you need to call, and the phone number is 800-318-2596. You can get the Affordable Care Act now better. If you couldn't get it before because you were making just a little bit over, well, they changed it. So you need to call them back and get the health care plan. You can do it. So please call and get the health care plan initiated and installed. We have until, I believe it's January 15th. Now, she said under certain circumstances, which I don't know what they are, but you need to speak to the agent when you get a hold of them. You'll be able to understand what might be the difference. But anybody that hasn't gotten it, don't go anyplace else. Get the Affordable Care Act. Get healthcare.gov, 800-318-2596. Okay? Now, we were in the middle of, I was getting ready to talk about the clown, the orange man in jumpsuit. The orange man in the orange jumpsuit. And he was formerly in the White House. Well, the man is going to be in deep trouble. Because I want to listen to what Miss Representative Liz Cheney said about this orange man in the White House.
President Trump continues to make the same false claims about a stolen election with which he has misled millions of Americans. These are the same claims he knows provoked violence in the past. Any communications Mr. Trump has with this committee will be under oath. And if he persists in lying then, he will be accountable under the laws of this great nation and subject to criminal penalties for every false word he speaks.
Hmm. That's right. Every false word he speaks. Now, he said that he wants to have a debate with the people on the committee individually. Well, first of all, why would he have a debate with the people on the committee individually by themselves with nobody else around? What does that have to do with him coming in front of the committee and giving his information that they asked for? See, he's not a member of the Capitol. He's not a member of the House. He's not a member of the Senate. He don't work in the White House. Just because you were there at one time hanging out in the bathroom, that don't mean you work there anymore. He didn't work there when he was there. He just hung out. Oh, and by the way, you know he's losing that place he has there down the block from the White House. The hotel. He's got to sell it. Why? He's got no damn money. He's never had any money. It's all been brick and mortar, a facade, a fake. Talking about fake news. Yeah, that's what he is. Fake news. That's what he's been doing. He's got to sell that place. And now it's going to be less than what he originally got it for. Because he has to sell it now. He can't afford to keep it. Because he's not making any money. Nobody's coming to see him anymore. He's not even up there in Washington. So all the people that would go to Washington to see him, He ain't there. And they're not going down to Florida to see him. Because he's a nobody anymore. He's a nobody. So, the golf resorts, you say? He probably tell them, dude, the one in Scotland is definitely going to be gone. You watch. After the one in Washington goes. Now, the CIA now can go change that back. Well, see, I don't know if they can do that now. See, I originally was supposed to be the new CIA headquarters. But he did not want that. He wanted them out of there. Let's fix up the old place. The old place with all the cobwebs and can't even stand up in a heavy hurricane. That's what he made them spend, a couple of $15, $20 million fixing that place up when they could have had a brand new building there where that place was. Hotel. You could have had a brand new place. But he didn't want the CIA to have a new place. And he didn't want to sell, he didn't want the another hotel to get in that place. Because then they would have a place that they could compete with him. So anyway, does that make any sense? What did I just say? I don't know what I said. Here's the thing. The original place that he built his hotel, he put that hotel in there so he could compete. No one else could compete against him. The CIA was supposed to have a brand new building. I forgot where it was supposed to be. But he didn't want to spend the money on that. He said, fix up the old place. Because he don't give a damn. He's not interested in the American public or our intelligence industry. He's interested in the J.D. That's all he's interested in. And that's Trump, not T. That's Trump. That's his real name. Anyway, that ain't happening now. And if you think he's going to be elected next president, you guys are in for a rude awakening. That's why I said in the very beginning of the show here, this man, all these GOP members have gone down the rabbit hole, and the rabbit hole is so deep, and you can't see your way out. If you turned around and looked up the way you were coming from, you still won't be able to see nothing but darkness, because that's how far down the rabbit hole you are. Now, there are some other places that this clown has also infected. You remember, getting to see about infected. You remember when they were having the debate with the first debate they had with Biden and him. They were supposed to have a test, a COVID test, before 72 hours before the first debate. Well, he didn't want to do that because he knew he was already infected. And he was infected when they had the first debate. He was infected when he had Barrett, the new Supreme Court Justice, welcomed at the White House. Remember? That's when they had that big big problem with so many people were infected. He was the one that was affecting everybody because he was patient zero. He was patient zero because nobody had the infection until they came to the White House. And he was the only one in the White House that had it, him and his wife, because he gave it to his wife. This is the problem we have. The man is such a liar. He don't care about anybody else but himself, because he knew that they were not going to let him die like these other 800,000 people in this country that have died from this virus. He walks out of the White House to the helicopter and is flown to the hospital where he can get the ultra sweet attention that someone, only a president of the United States, could get. And then he had the nerve to have the Secret Service drive him around in the car while he infected them just to show you there was nothing wrong with me. What the hell did you go to the hospital for if there was nothing wrong with you? I mean, what would be the reason to go to the hospital if there was nothing wrong with you? He almost died at the hospital. And then when he gets out of the hospital 2 days later, he gets off the helicopter, walks up and barely makes it up the stairs because he wants to show you how strong he is, walks up the back stairway, the back of the White House, takes off his mask and sucks in a bunch of air. You can see him do it. And doesn't wear the daggone mask. He goes and infects everybody in the damn White House. The man is an embarrassment to this country. An embarrassment. And why? Because he just doesn't care. He just does not care. So this is where the man is now. And this is what Liz Cheney was talking about when she says, don't think you're going to come in here and lie to this committee. Because you will go like your boy Bannon and like your other brain trust will go when they come in here. And you think Clark is going to do the same thing? He's going to come in there and take the Fifth Amendment? I don't think so. He can take the Fifth Amendment all he wants. That doesn't mean he's not going to get indicted. They already have him indicted. They, among the committee, they've already indicted him. They've already passed that Rubicon. Now it just takes the rest of the, when they present it to the rest of the House, to have him indicted. That's all. So here we are. This man is in such a disgrace. It's really horrendous. Now, what I also wanted to talk about was, what do you think about this? The Michigan school shooting. I mean, this is really horrendous. and we're finding more information about it. I heard about this day for yesterday, but I didn't know how much the two clowns' parents were involved. Didn't know how much they were involved. Father went out and bought the gun for the young man, the 15-year-old. And I guess I really can't blame him as much as I blame the parents. Because what they're doing now is that it seems though the parents now are being indicted. I think I have something on this now. Let me look. The parents are going to be indicted on this problem now. I think they're the ones that's really going to affect. I think they're the ones that it's really going to affect. And I don't know why I don't have this on here, but I'm going to look for it in here. The parents, the father, that is, went out and bought the son this gun. And why we don't actually know yet, but the DA is so upset about this that the DA this afternoon has charged them each with 4 counts of manslaughter. That's how upset the DA is about this. See, and I understand that in Michigan, you don't have to have a gun safe or a place to store your gun. So I think that's one of the reasons why they're having a major problem here, because they didn't have the protection that they actually needed for this gun. And we're going to let me play a little bit of this right now so you can hear it.
President Trump continues to make the same false claims.
Oop, wrong
about
one.
A stolen election.
Sorry. All right. Nope. Don't have it yet. It's not up yet. Anyway, I just put it up. I thought that was the right one, but it's not. Anyway, this where am I at here? Oh yeah, okay. Let me get back to where the studio was. This one is the where am I at here? I lost it. Okay. Nope. I didn't find it yet. Okay. The people who are no, that's the wrong one. I thought I had this one here. Oh, the committee. Okay, so this is the thing too. Okay, let's see here. All right, let's play this right here.
And to the saga of Mark Meadows. What about him? Do you think they're going to get any valuable information from him?
I don't know, because look, you know, 6,000 emails can, I mean, which is what he said to have provided. 6,000 emails can also be re-colon.
I don't know if I've written 6,000 emails in my entire.
Right, or no, but the thing, like, it might be forwards.
Around.
It might be forwards of emails or things that just aren't. Yeah. So we don't know what he's actually providing, and the devil's really in the details, Don, when it comes to exactly how much information and what both he and the committee think privilege is with respect to the president and so on. So yes, and I've seen this happen countless times, both in the Justice Department and in Congress, where you think someone's coming in to testify, mm-hmm. you think you have an agreement, and that first question comes out of the lawyer's mouth, and it all falls apart. So cautiously optimistic that they're going to get information out of him, but it's just not clear.
Thank you, Elliot.
Now, it seems as though that Mark Meadows has written a book. You hear about this? Mark Meadows has written a book, and he wrote the book over in England. And the book is about his time as chief of staff to the President of the United States, Orange Man in the White House. Now, why he went over to England and wrote this book and didn't write it here in this country, I guess we can only assume that the people here would ask him questions, would know more about what he's lying about than what he's not lying about, because he is the one that said that the President of the United States, the former President of the United States, was infected before he went to the debate with President Biden. And when he was on the Fox News, he says, oh, no, that's not exactly true. It's just that some of these people just want to make up stories, and they twisted the story, my story around a little bit. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. You're either lying when you wrote the book, or you're lying now. So why is anybody going to believe you? Is he trying to keep his powder dry? So because he don't have no place else to go, because he can't run for office anymore. As a matter of fact, before he became chief of staff, the only reason why he became chief of staff is because he wanted to leave, because they didn't like him. The other representatives didn't like him anyway, because they knew he was a liar. So he fit right in there with Donald J. Trump. Oh, yeah, he fit right in with him. And you know, of course, Trump knew all about this. That's why he got him, because he knew he was a liar. And he helped run the ship correct for Trump, because he lies. He lies all the time. So it just seems like everybody lies over there. Everybody lies. Let's just see here about this. This is one piece of work here, Mr. This is about the infection, I believe. Let's see what this.
So, bombshell new details tonight on when the then president tested positive for COVID. In excerpts of a new book first obtained by The Guardian, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows writes, his former boss, and I quote here, tested positive. No quote here, but this is what he says. Tested positive for COVID on September 26, 2020. That is 3 days before his first debate with Joe Biden, and almost a week before he publicly acknowledged it. September 26 was also the day of a White House event for then Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett that turned out to be a super spreader event. Remember that? At least 12 attendees later tested positive. Meadows says later that day, the White House doctor called to say Trump tested positive on a first COVID test. Former president denying the report tonight. So joining me now to discuss CNN medical analyst Dr. Jonathan Reiner. So here we go, Doc. Man, oh, man, oh, man. This revelation in the book, what do you think of it? Because he worked for the president. This is the president's guy. He's at the debate with Joe Biden. He wasn't wearing a mask. He looked out of it. I mean, did he put the nominee and now President Biden's life in danger?
He put so many people's lives in danger. You know, John, just when you think that, you know, we couldn't stuff any more, you know, disgraceful behavior into the scrapbook of that administration, now we learn that the White House knew the President of the United States was infected with the coronavirus 3 days before the debate with Joe Biden. Now we know who the super spreader actually was at the Amy Coney Barrett announcement, when seven people, you know, including the First Lady, including Chris Christie, including two United States senators, got infected. This is really an astonishing admission of reckless behavior, and on so many parts. First of all, Mr. Meadows sort of laughs this off as, well, Trump will be Trump. But Mr. Meadows is complicit in this. This was a reportable health event. When you test positive for the coronavirus, it gets sent to the county. And what should be going on is contact tracing. And when the White House physician identified the President of the United States as being positive for COVID, everything should have stopped. He should have gone into isolation. It should have, and then they should have started tracing all the contacts the President was likely to have had from the time they think he was likely infected. But yet they hid this. That was an incredible dereliction of duty on the part of the White House physician. And if the President had ordered him to keep this quiet, that was an unlawful order. And he should have refused to obey that, or just simply resign. The President endangered the people at that event. He endangered the people at a Gold Star family event the next day. He endangered his Secret Service entourage, the people that fly him on Air Force One, and he endangered then Vice President Biden at the debate. Mm. Astonishing, dishonest, reckless disregard for human life.
Look, it's awful. I'm not surprised, though. Donald Trump lied. I mean, he tells more lies than he tells the truth. And you know that old thing, how do you know someone's lying? He's lying, his mouth is moving.
His mouth is moving. Right.
But when it comes to something like this, even, because they're saying, well, you know, they thought it was a false positive, whatever, if you come back and say that, BS, or whatever you thought, even if it's a false positive, you still don't continue to act as if it's not. You should be quarantining. You should be taking precautions. You should be wearing masks,
yeah,
social distancing around people. You should be telling people, look, I don't know if it's a false positive or not. I'm going to, you know, with precaution to, you know, in deference to the other person, to Joe Biden on the stage, and for all the other people that I have to be with, I'm just going to sit tight. Maybe we can reschedule the debate. Whatever it is that you have to do, or, you know, whatever it is, the Rose Garden event. I mean, it's unbelievable. And Meadows is now claiming that Trump first tested positive with an old model kit. Then he tested negative with an antigen test. I mean,
now go on.
The President tested positive almost certainly with a PCR test, the most reliable test. And then they tried to verify it with the less reliable antigen test. And if they differed, you would always do a tiebreaker with the most reliable test, which would be another PCR test.
You know, the night that you basically broke the news that the President was positive, 5 days later, we all waited for a result that was sent to Bethesda, which was a PCR test. The confirmatory test was another PCR test. The White House knew that the President was positive. And when you think, and remember, he wasn't retested before the debate because they knew he would be positive. And that President was not going to was not going to cancel that debate. It didn't matter who he hurt.
Wow. Awful. There are no words. Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
You too. Can you believe that? Seriously. Think about that.
Unbelievable. Because he doesn't care. I'll do it my way and hell with you. As simple as that. That's how it goes. If I wasn't passed out in my bed or on the floor, I'm fine. And I can't let anybody else. I am stronger than dirt. And if I tell you one thing, don't contradict me. This is what he feels. He doesn't care about what anybody else feels. What does he care about them? What does he care about you? He don't care a damn about you. Not at all. But that's the whole party. The whole party is like that. The whole party is like that. What are you going to do when the whole party is that way? The whole party is that way. They don't give a damn about nothing about you. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care at all. Now see, I need to find this one thing here that showed me that, oh, that's what I need to do. I need to get rid of that. Okay, let me get out of there. There is a, well, how come I can't see that? That should be there. See, now I don't understand this at all. Oh, no, that's wrong. That's right. That's not, I made a mistake there. Yeah. Okay, now, okay, let me just listen to this.
And he obviously has quite an emotional...
Oh, wrong one. Oh, wrong one. What's going on here?
That I want to show you. So first, your thoughts on I think Jackie and Ashley described the sort of the spectrum, right? You've got to cover the challenges for one party that is trying to push through these huge pieces of the Biden agenda with a whole lot of success, but nothing is, you know, it is called toxic Maine for a reason. And then the other side, which is sort of unrepentant proliferators of violent imagery.
Yes, I mean, you're right, Nicole, to call out the false equivalence of this and the both sides-ism of it. The Democrats are trying to govern. There are policy differences, which I believe was the phrase you used in the introduction. That's perfectly acceptable in a party. That's what we like about democracy. The other side is a party without any content at all, without any policies. It's the Trump's weaponization of grievance has become the politics of vengeance. All they know how to do is punish people or not punish people that should be punished. That's not a governing party. So it's not a split screen in the sense that they're both equivalent. I mean, the Democrats are trying to govern. The irony of this all, as Ashley pointed out, is that even when you pass something that's transformational, voters don't feel it right away. They don't feel it for years. And so, yes, the Democrats have to go out and talk about what they did, but unfortunately, voters are not going to feel it necessarily in their pocketbook. They're not going to see those bridges repaired right away. They're not going to see those roads fixed. So that's a difficult problem.
Rick, I want to show you something else that happened today. This is a Republican senator named John Kennedy.
I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade.
Senator, I'm not a communist. I do not subscribe to that ideology. I could not choose where I was born. I do not remember joining any Facebook group that subscribes to that ideology. I would never knowingly join any such group. There is no record of me ever actually participating in any Marxist or communist discussions of any kind. My family suffered under the communist regime. I grew up without knowing half of my family. My grandmother herself escaped death twice under the Stalin regime. This is what's seared in my mind. That's who I am. I remember that history. I came to this country. I'm proud to be an American.
Rick, I want to choose my words carefully because I'm sure Kennedy will take a victory lap on another channel tonight. This is a disgrace not just to the country. It's a disgrace not just to the United States Senate. It's a disgrace to the party of Ronald Reagan, who described the United States of America as a shining city on the hill, not because it was bright or shiny, but because it was a beacon for people like this Biden nominee. What do you do with a party that is at best stupid, at worst flagrantly racist?
Well, it also just smacks of McCarthyism and the House of Un-American Activities period where people for affiliations were called out as being communists. I mean, it's just an insulting question on every level, on the political level, on the level of humanity. And, of course, her answer was inspiring. I mean, the whole point of our system is that people can escape from authoritarian systems. And the Republican Party has become the party that supports authoritarian governments. It's really, as you say, Ronald Reagan is not just turning over in his grave, he's spinning in his grave.
And Jackie, I guess it's a window into what you try to convey on this program you see every day.
Yeah, Nicole, and I know we talked about this earlier this week, but the timing is especially unfortunate for Republicans that you can directly contrast the outrage you're seeing from the House GOP conference over the 13 Republicans who voted for policy, because as these Republican lawmakers who supported the bipartisan infrastructure bill have said, they are getting millions of dollars to repair bridges and roads for their constituents in their districts, and there's no way that they could have voted against this infrastructure investment, versus the lack of outrage that you're seeing from the party and from the House GOP about Paul Gosar's tweet. When you put that back to back, as I did in my questioning to Republicans throughout the week, several of them admitted, yes, when you put it that way, it does not bode well. It doesn't look good for the party. But look, this is why this is potentially problematic for Leader McCarthy, and as he's looking ahead to the House GOP potentially taking back the majority next year. Being in the mushy middle the way he is, being silent on the extremists in his conference, makes it so that people who are a little bit more moderate, the Don Bacon of the party, mm-hmm. might not support him either. Don Bacon told us yesterday that he had questions about McCarthy's leadership, that he would like to see McCarthy be more independent of Trump and support members of the party who are making decisions based on policy.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry, Ashley, when I hear people say they'd like to see someone be more independent of the biggest electoral loser in modern Republican political history. And the guy lost the majority in the Senate. He lost the White House. Turned McCarthy's a minority leader. What is the White House? I know the White House doesn't have a lot of patience for engaging publicly around any of this, but I also know that they do watch these symptoms that the president's effort to heal the soul of the country is not making inroads on the right.
It sure isn't. And not only is it not making inroads, but if anything, one of the political superpowers that President Biden had when he came to office was that even people, Republicans who maybe didn't support him ideologically, he was sort of this unoffensive guy, your unoffensive uncle or grandfather. And now he has lost that, at least among that Trump base that you're talking about not making inroads in. And I would point to, I can't say on air the origin of it, but the Let's Go Brandon chants that, started in stadiums and bars and are now being shouted in churches, being sold on shirts, signs. They're sort of in every aspect of civic life. That is a reflection of the fervent anger and animosity that a lot of this country feels towards President Biden, which makes what he promised during the campaign, that he could be elected, that he could restore bipartisanship, that he could work across the aisle, that he could take the temperature down, a lot more difficult.
And, Rick Singh, I know the White House feels that, like, the deliverables speak for them in places where they're chanting these awful things, that some of those people may get caught up in the frenzy of the moment, but at the end of the day, they have shots in their arms, they have boosters coming their way, their kids have vaccines. They have money in their paycheck, that it is about outputs. It is about governing for every American, something the last president didn't even pretend to try to do. Other than that, what can they do?
Well, the once upon a time politics of the thing speaks for itself, race ipso loquitur, doesn't exist anymore. Nothing speaks for itself anymore. And when we have a politics that has devolved into tribalism, nothing you show the other side makes an impression at all, because believing is seeing. They have a certain attitude that can't be repulsed by facts. And in fact, you know, the Republican Party and Trumpism is taking all of these pages out of the authoritarian playbook, which is basically to say that empirical facts are not real. Everything is possible and nothing is real, as they say in Russia. And that's very, very difficult for us, because what you might have happen, and this is what you've been inching toward, is this, you know, we could have an actual democratic election and elect a party that does away with our democracy. That's not what the founders wanted to have happen.
It is an unbelievable state of affairs. Ashley, Jackie, and Rick are sticking around. When we come back, we will talk with a member of Congress on yesterday.
This U.S. stop right now on the highway. You can come get this.
Okay. There's a new breaking news story out here that Jennifer Crumbly and James Crumbly, the parents of the 15-year-old shooter in Oxford, have gone on the lam. The FBI and the sheriff's department are out looking for them. They should be out gunning for them, for the parents of the young shooter. So it shows you how much they really cared about their son. They could get 4 counts each. They get 60 years each. Not that they would, but their child is going to need them.
After school, as well as
they let him, as they say now, Nicole is saying, when they were, when they came to school, the story goes, when they came to school, 2 days in a row. And the last day when he did the shooting, they were at the school because evidently he's been drawing pictures, bodies, blood stained, blood flowing all over, and the teachers got worried about it, called the parents up, and you would think that the parents would have taken him home with them, but they didn't. They let him go back to his classroom. Instead, he went to the bathroom, and when he came out, he started shooting. So this is a major escalation in the problem that they had at this school. And they did not know whether or not this young man, and I now I'm starting to feel sorry for him, because the parents are the ones that have him this way. And that means that they are really screwed up. And I'm sure they have weapons on them. So let's see if we can hear some of this. I don't know if we can. But
charged in that circumstance, this is analogous.
Chuck, is there a lot of precedent? And I have to say, I have heard of civil cases involving liability for parents, for example, at underage parties where kids are drinking, and as you describe a scenario where someone drives. But is there precedent for criminal prosecutions resulting in, and I believe that the sentence for the parents, if they were found guilty, is a 15-year felony involved for a man.
A 15-year felony on each count, so theoretically, Nicole, 16 years for both each parent is convicted on all 4 counts. But putting aside what their final sentence may be, because we should save that conversation for another day, there is some precedent for charging parents criminally when their child does something horrific, like here. I don't know of many cases nationwide. You're quite right, there could be civil liability, meaning damages, but let's also put that aside. When I was the United States Attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia, we had an analogous case. This was 15 years ago. And two Fairfax County police officers, Vicki Armel and Mike Barbarino, were murdered by a disturbed young man named Michael Kennedy. He was 18 years old at the time. A horrible tragedy, these two minor officers, each of whom left behind a spouse and two children. We ended up charging Brian Kennedy, Michael's father, of being a drug user in possession of firearms, made him a prohibited person under federal law. You know, the criminal justice system is not perfect at accountability. Sometimes we're good at it, but we're never perfect at it. And holding the father accountable for the son's deeds was an imperfect measure of accountability. The son had been killed in the shootout when he executed these two police officers. But we did charge the father. I don't know of very many cases nationwide where criminal charges are brought against parents, but there are examples, and I think they send an important message to parents who failed to do what the Crumblies apparently failed to do, what they allegedly failed to do, which was to supervise a disturbed child with access to a deadly weapon.
It's in a really important piece of context and history and breaking news context. I'm really grateful to you for that, Chuck Rosenberg. Chuck, I want to know what you're pursuing now in terms of questions you would like answers to, other than the obvious, where are the Crumblies?
I think it really goes to what was the process, what was the level of surveillance beforehand. I mean, one thing that you saw the county sheriff there expressed genuine frustration over the idea that he did not get an official heads up that these charges were coming. But Nicole, if you've been listening to the tone of the prosecutor when she was sitting next to the county sheriff, it was very clear that the parents were very much in focus here, that she was considering charges. She said that explicitly. As recently as yesterday, she's been talking about the importance of responsible gun ownership. It was clear that the county sheriff also knew some of the evidence that was laid out today in terms of the specific reasons why this 15-year-old suspect was brought down to the front office twice. He knew the details of that that drawing that he had, that a teacher saw and was so disturbed by that she took a picture of it before he was called down to the office. So I think it was signaled that this was happening. We knew yesterday it was going to be happening in the next 24 hours. We are now in that period, that 24-hour period. So I think it's very clear that charges were likely in this case. It was why we've been watching. It's why we've been checking in with the prosecutor's office almost on an hourly basis in anticipation of this. So I think it's very clear that charges were coming in. In terms of the miscommunication there, I don't know what else was there, but it was clear these charges were coming in. There's a question of why these parents weren't under some formal surveillance. If that's allowed, if that's able to happen, why weren't they when they knew the charges were imminent?
Now, I'll have an opportunity to put that question to Oakland County, Michigan Prosecutor Karen McDonald in the next hour. Frank, I want to give you the last word on sort of the forest through the trees. Obviously, what happened today, the manhunt that ensued is the news right now. But 2 days ago, Shannon Watts mentioned the opportunity, perhaps, to hold parents accountable. Yesterday, Frank Guttenberg, who's lost his daughter in Parkland, talked about the need to change the equation around the escalation. I believe 2021 is the deadliest year for school shootings in, I think, since 1999. This prosecutor did something different. She did something bold. There's not a ton of precedent for it. And in your view, what should we be looking out for in the coming days?
So, let's keep our eye on how those who are Second Amendment enthusiasts until the end of the earth when it comes to even children having access to guns. Let's see how they respond. Let's see how this gets spun by perhaps members of Congress even who are even owned by the NRA in many respects of where their donations come from. Let's keep an eye on that and try to keep them honest in terms of what really happened here and the degree to which these now potentially huge parents become some kind of cause celeb for the far right, which would be a terrible politicizing of a tragedy that we've seen that happen before. And then let's all, and I'm going to give people some homework here. Go and ask your school board and your school officials, what is the level of partnership that we have in our school between the sheriff or the police and the guidance counselors and the principal? When I was in the FBI, we held seminars for these partnerships, and in many cases, it was the very first time that, say, an assistant principal or an assistant chief of police had ever met each other, let alone understood how they should work together and assess a threat. So ask those questions if you're a parent. Get those answers as soon as you're back next week.
We always do, as you say, in terms of homework. My thanks to Frank DeGuzzi and Shaq Brewster for hopping on at a moment's notice and being part of our 14 News coverage. As I said, in the next hour, we'll have an opportunity to speak with Oakland County, Michigan prosecutor Karen McDonald on her decision to prosecute these parents.
Okay.
What comes next in the...
So that's where we're at right now. I'm telling you. But I hope you were all able to hear that little bit that just triggered off here. It's incredible. They're on the run now. And let's see what Francis Augusti says. Let's see what these Fox News and these other right-wing nut jobs in the House and Senate say about this, about guns and the no controls that we have over them. Let's see what they say about that. Let's just see what they say about that. There's also a problem, if I can find it here, that MTP was talking about, and I want to get a little play on this if I can. And that's also 1019, so I have to go in here and get that 1019. Let's see here. Let's see. Now, before we leave here, let's get something on this. Jonathan Kyle has written a book on, it's called Betrayal. It's about the orange man in the White House, how he has betrayed this country, and how he systematically betrayed this country, which is what he did. Let's hear this.
Protected, and I had heard that he was in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
No, because I had heard he was in very good shape. But no,
you
I
heard those
it,
chants. That was terrible. I mean, it was, you know, the
he could have. Well, the people were very angry.
They were saying, "Hang my."
Because hand. It's common sense, John. It's common sense.
Ooh, that was Donald Trump telling ABC's Jonathan Carl that it was common sense for the angry MAGA mob on January 6th to threaten the life of his own vice president. It's just one of the many revelations in Carl's new book, Betrayal, the final act of the Trump show. Among other things, Carl reveals that Trump fired Secretary of Defense Mark Esper on the recommendation of the guy who formerly carried his bags for him, 30-year-old John McEntee, who Trump picked to lead the White House personnel office. Secretary Esper's offenses, according to McEntee, included focusing on Russia and promoting diversity in the ranks of the military, which it seems were considered betrayals of Trump's mission. The book also covers the lunacy of Trump's allies who pursued baseless election conspiracies, including the claim that wireless thermostats made in China might have been used to manipulate voting machines in Georgia. Trump actually asked his director of national intelligence to look into that one. Carl also discloses that during the insurrection, the official vice presidential photographer was in hiding with Mike Pence at the Capitol. However, Pence refused to allow Carl to publish any of the photos from during the siege, despite the fact that the photographer's salary was paid by U.S. taxpayers and the images are public property. There are also some unflattering details about former financial journalist and current Trump media personality Maria Bartiromo of Fox News, who reportedly called Attorney General Bill Barr to complain that the Justice Department wasn't intervening in the election to keep Trump in office. Barr told Carl, she called me up, but she was screaming. I yelled back at her. She's lost it. Joining me now, Jonathan Carl, ABC News chief Washington correspondent, author of Betrayal, the Final Act of the Trump Show. Here's the book. I hope people will pick it up, because just when you think you cannot learn anything weirder about Donald Trump, it gets weirder. But you open the book talking about the scene, and I've heard this before from other people who've interviewed Trump, about the way he sort of puts himself on display at Mar-a-Lago. And not because he had to, because he could have gone somewhere more private to have a real interview, but he wanted to do it in public.
This is in March. So this is just about 2 months after he's left office, barely 2 months after January 6th. Everything is raw and fresh. He invites me down to Mar-a-Lago to do the interview, and the interview takes place right in the middle of the lobby.
Yeah.
You know, big towering ceilings, the ornate walls, and the interview happened right before dinner time.
Yeah.
So you actually hear on that tape people coming in for dinner, for happy hour. And I was looking for something. Book interview is different than a television interview. You can take a step back. There's no cameras. There's a level of intimacy you can have. I wanted to see any hint of regret, any hint of remorse for what happened on January 6th. And you hear it.
None.
Absolutely.
You actually describe him in the opening of the book as being sort of gleefully vengeful, that the sense of vengeance is what made him happy.
He was in a good mood. Okay, so he's talking about how awful all these Republicans were who betrayed him, that if Mike Pence had had more courage, if he had done what he wanted to do, he'd still be president, the terrible things that Bill Barr had done to him, that Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell had not fought for him, and he was like, it got him excited.
Yeah. Do you believe, having sat down with Donald Trump, looked him in the eye, talked to him, that he genuinely believes the election was stolen, or that this is just an act because he doesn't want to admit that he lost?
So I believe that he has come to believe this. I don't believe it was always that way. I believe that this was an act. He knew. It was very strategic. His whole brand is based on the fact, I'm the guy who wins.
Yeah.
So if he loses, it's done.
Yeah.
So he had to at least convince his supporters that he had not lost. But I think now, I had one final conversation with him over the phone over the summers. I was about to go to press. And he was telling me that Texas was going to do an audit of the vote too, which now we know. But I didn't even know it yet.
Right.
He was telling me, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. You won Texas.
Right.
What are you talking about? And he just got so agitated with me that he ended up hanging up the phone. He was no longer I think he believes it.
And you talk about Kevin McCarthy here.
Yeah.
You write that it's not clear to you, and I've had the same theory, that Kevin McCarthy would automatically become Speaker if the House were to flip to the Republicans, because despite the fact that the, you know, minority leader has done everything he can to kiss up to Trump and to make up with him, he'd probably really rather have, like, a Jim Jordan.
Well,
and
yeah,
it's not clear the caucus would even support Carl.
Right,
support McCarthy. Sorry.
Yeah, look, Mark Meadows, who is still very close to Trump and doing everything he can to help Trump out, Mark Meadows has told people that he wants to bring McCarthy down. We'll see. The thing is, what McCarthy has going for him is who else can get a majority?
Jim Jordan.
Well, first of all, Jordan has been very close to McCarthy. McCarthy has brought him in. You know, he's
yeah.
a friend close.
Yeah.
He's even closer. And I don't think Jim Jordan would challenge him.
What about this idea? Because there is the assumption, you know, that a lot of people are making, that Donald Trump is putting in place all of the pieces that he needs, taking down all of the people who resisted. And as you said, he's extremely vengeful, which is a lot of what this book is about,
yes.
About everyone he thinks betrayed him and didn't keep him in office. And that he's put in all the people and the flunkies in place that he will run again in 2024 and then be triumphant. You're saying you don't necessarily believe that.
Look, and he may run. People around him say that he's definitely running. He's off the races. And certainly Donald Trump wants us to believe he's running, because that's
right.
what makes him relevant. But I don't think he's going to run. I won't be shocked if he does run. But that said, he is putting in place he is going out methodically to defeat and to destroy anybody that was not with him in his crazy drive to overturn the election. I don't know how successful he's ultimately going to be in that. I mean, we will see how this goes, but it is an effort to take out anybody who wasn't sufficiently, not just the people that voted to impeach him in the House, but this is obviously local officials. I mean, one of the moments that I thought was very significant during the transition is when the Michigan Republican leaders, these were Trump people, mm-hmm. and their constituents were solidly Donald Trump, and Trump summons them to the Oval Office in late November and says, I need you to reconvene the Michigan legislature and send, you know, take back those Biden electoral votes yeah. and send Trump votes. And they told him flatly no.
Yeah.
He doesn't want those kind of people around anymore.
And he's working to get rid of them. What about...
Not with across-the-board success, by mm-hmm. the way, but he's working to get rid of them.
You also write about some of the sort of interesting characters, you know, the Sidney Powells of the world. Yeah. Did Donald Trump genuinely believe that they were capable, that this crew of people, including the pillow guy and all those, and Rudy Giuliani, were actually capable of keeping him in office?
Well, it's interesting that there's a dramatic scene when he's confronting what Bill Barr after Barr has said there is no election fraud, and Trump is like screaming at him in this meeting in the dining room off the Oval Office, and Barr says, look, first of all, your legal team has been a clown show, and if you had any chance of challenging anything, you needed to have the best people in there from the start. And Trump actually says, well, on that part you might be right. So I think he understood that. But you mentioned the conspiracy theories, the thermostats, the German
yeah.
thermostats, the Italian military spy satellites that supposedly switched votes, the Gina Haspel, you know, got injured trying to secure a server in Germany that controlled all this stuff. I mean, I can't say that, but
yeah.
crazy stuff,
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You can find it on QAnon. You can see it in the Outer Fringes. This was talked about in the Oval Office. And the president of the United States was pushing it, and his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, was demanding not to, you mentioned Ratcliffe, the director of national intelligence, told him to look into it, told the Department of Justice to look into various things, and over at the Pentagon. This was, I mean, you can laugh about it, but this is what was driving the top levels of the executive branch of our government.
And I guess the obvious question
crazy
I have to ask
stuff.
You is, you've talked to him, sat across him, he says he seems to believe all this stuff. Did Donald Trump come across you as somebody who is rational, mentally all there?
It's a very strange thing. He comes out, he's gregarious, he's got a way of trying to charm you. He doesn't seem like, you know, he's somebody that's completely insane at all. I mean, he conducts himself, he conducts his business. But it's the lack of any sense of remorse, I
yeah.
think, that really comes across as there's something that's just
something
not
wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Very clear. Betrayal is the name of the book. Jonathan Carl, excellent job.
Thank you.
And you're going to want to read this one. It is a page-turner. Thank you all very much. Thank you very much. And up next...
Is now is love, sweet love. Okay, I hope you could hear that. I don't know if I had it on the right cue or not. Yeah, Warwick, which I love. Oh my God, Discover card. Oh my God, give me a break. Anyway, I love that song, and Dionne Warwick, one of my favorite singers. Anyway, Let's get back to a little bit of stuff before we leave here. The January 6th committee has interviewed over 250 people so far. And you know the thing that you first learn when you go to school to become a lawyer? Trial lawyer. Never ask a question you don't know the answer to. If you're the lawyer, the prosecutor, even the DA, even the defense lawyer, you don't ask a question that you don't know the answer to. And if you don't know the answer to the question, you're in deep doo-doo. Mr. Trump and Mr. Clark and Mr. Bannon and Mr. Mark Mueller, you're going to be in deep trouble. That's what's going to happen. Now, I would like everybody to have a great, great, great weekend, because I have to run to a, I shouldn't say run, but I have to, with my leg, I have a very important meeting I need to go to, and I want everybody to stay nice and cozy. And remember, Mr. Leon Bridges loves that sweet, sweet song. Let's listen to him. Everybody have a great weekend, and I will see you same time, same station, same bat channel next week. All right?
I can't sing. And you don't seem
Thank you.